Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 26, Why Canada? So it's now time to get back into the swing of things. I took off 2 weeks ago for the Army Camp weekend up at Saratoga National Historical Park. And last week I was working on a lot of stuff for summer school and preparing for my new job, so I had to take some time to get things back and organized. So we're going to switch our story arc now. We spent a lot of time in the New England colonies talking about the start of the Revolution, Lexington and Concord. We moved into the Battle of Bunker Hill and all the preparation that comes into starting a revolution. Well, now we're going to move into the first major campaign of the war. And today I want to just set the stage and talk about why is the first major campaign of the American Revolution the chosen spot being Canada. So we're going to move away from Boston for a little while, and I'm going to talk about the whole campaign from the beginning to the end of the campaign in the northern colonies. And then we're going to come back to Washington's army, and we're going to pick up where we left off with him arriving just after Bunker Hill, what the situation is like there. So we spent some time talking about Benedict Arnold and Ethan Allen and the capture of Fort Ticonderoga on May 10th of 75. Around the same time, Patriots in the area had captured Skanesboro, or what is known today as Whitehall, New York, captured some loot, including a Tory schooner. They will rename the schooner the Liberty, and they will fit it for action on Lake Champlain. While the Patriots are celebrating their victory in the capture of Fort Ticonderoga, some intel comes down about a day or two later about a sloop that's being fitted at the fort at St. John up in Canada. A sloop on Lake Champlain, no matter how many guns it has, will be able to counter any kind of operation that the Patriots can do in the area, just because a sloop is a fair-sized warship. Look back to the Margaretta incident that we talked about a few episodes ago. So Arnold leaps into action. He grabs several of his Connecticut men and some bateaux and the Liberty and says, "We are heading north." Now he assigns about 50 men to man the schooner. Another 30 will be in his advance party in the bateaux. Now, bateau is going to be a phrase that is going to be thrown around a lot, so I'm going to give just a slight footnote to give you the meaning of the word. Bateau is just French for boat. It is a flat-bottom boat that was very common for working on small rivers and creeks during the 17th and 18th centuries. Very popular to use in the northern colonies, and the bateau will be something that we'll see and hear a lot about as we talk about operations in those northern colonies from here on out. So it's going to take about a day for the Liberty to be fitted and ready to go to head up to Canada. But Arnold, being ever impatient, decided to take 30 of his men in two bateaux and be an advance party heading up the lake and sort of scouting out the path along the way. So the schooner makes its way on May 16th, and it comes across a southbound ship leaving from Canada heading down towards New York. They search the boat and take the mail from Canada, and in the mail is a complete list of British regulars, the complete numbers of British regulars in Canada. Now, this is useful information, and is probably one of the key things that starts the campaign in the first place, is we now know how many troops are stationed in the colony of Canada at this very moment. Remember, they were taking troops out of Canada left, right, and sideways because First Gage, now Howe, were in desperate need of soldiers down in Boston to help with the Patriot siege of the city. So that intel is forwarded back to the Continental Congress, and was probably a key player in their campaign choices in the northern colonies in the entire rest of 1775. On May 18th, the Liberty and Arnold will reunite together, and he will quickly separate from the Liberty again. The Liberty will set up a position just south of St. John's, while Arnold will take 35 men by bateau and take a land route near the fort to kind of set up a surprise land attack for the garrison at the fort. Now, when we talk about Fort St. John, I want everyone to understand that this is not so much a fort as a decrepit and dilapidated old French and Indian War era fortress that was on the Richelieu River. It was at a key point, and there was a small settlement there, but it was so far north that there wasn't much thought about it until the British started invading Canada. So after the garrison there during the French and Indian War is defeated, the British has simply burned the fort. And what's left of the fort walls, however burnt out they are, is all that really protects the 14-man, yes, I said 14-man garrison at Fort St. John. It was some burnt out walls, earthworks, and a small barracks, which makes up the entirety of the fort itself. There was a small fishing/trapper's village nearby that used the river and the lakes to transport their goods north up into Montreal and Quebec, or south down into the New York colony. Now, the sloop in question was being retrofitted at an old shipyard that the fort had nearby. So there's not much to the fort, which is not really a surprise that when 35 patriots hopped off some bateaux and surprised the 14-man garrison, that a small show of force convinced the fort's commander that, well, he should probably concede to the patriots. So having captured some prisoners, capturing about 4 extra bateaux, the sloop that they were looking for, and 2 brass field pieces, the patriots were ready to make a hasty retreat. Burning all other watercraft, Arnold loaded up his 80 or so men. Taking the prisoners and field guns with him, they headed back towards Fort Ticonderoga. Now, Fort St. John would have been a nice little feather in the hat of Arnold, considering that Ethan Allen left him completely out of the capture of Fort Ticonderoga. So it would have looked really good on Arnold's resume if he held the fort. But Arnold was a smart commander, and he knew if he stayed at Fort St. John, Montreal was soon to be sending troops to retake the position. And even with his 85 men and the 2 ships, he was not going to be able to stop British regulars. So he decides that his best course of action is to leave the fort and head back south. They're only about 6 miles from the fort when they run into our old friend Ethan Allen, who's taking about 60 of his Green Mountain boys and heading up to Fort St. John. His plan is to hold the fort. Well, Arnold advises him that it's not such a great idea, considering that with the close proximity to Montreal, there was definitely going to be a Montreal counterattack at any point. Guy Carleton was not going to allow the fort to go occupied by the Patriots for very long. But Ethan Allen swore that he was going to hold the fort, so him and his men were going to head up there and set up ambush positions and wait for the counterattack. Now, I like to think, you know, when you're a historian, you really like to put your own voice sometimes into a situation. And this is one of those moments where I just think about Benedict Arnold, knowing the character of the man and how prideful he is and how much he probably disliked Ethan Allen. And so when Ethan Allen said, "I'm going to keep Fort St. John, you just watch," I'm sure Benedict Arnold's voice was like, "Oh no, Ethan, don't, such a bad idea." And so Benedict Arnold continued back to Fort Ticonderoga. Well, we had talked about Ethan Allen in his own episode, and so it's not a surprise when I tell you that, yes, the Green Mountain Boys set up their ambush positions, and yes, Guy Carleton did send men to retake Fort St. John, about 180 of them, to be precise. And there was some skirmishing, a couple of Green Mountain Boys were injured, but one was captured. Yes, Ethan Allen was captured. He was sent to Montreal, eventually to Quebec, and then made his way back to England. And we talked about it, and so we know the outcome for the story of Ethan Allen, but I can gladly say that we will hear from Ethan Allen no more during this podcast. I'm done with him. I'm happy. It's over. So Benedict Arnold has made his way back to Fort Ticonderoga. He has captured four extra bateaux and the sloop. The sloop will be renamed Enterprise. He's got a sloop, a schooner, and about a half dozen or so bateaux, plus whatever other bateaux that they had. And Benedict Arnold has got himself the makings of his own little navy. But the Benedict Arnold Navy will have to wait for another day, because that's a story for another time. Now, all of this action is happening up in and around upstate New York and in Canada, and it all happens in an 8-day period. The fort is at Ticonderoga is captured on the 10th. Fort St. John is, we'll say, raided on May 18th. Second Continental Congress doesn't learn any of this until the 18th. Or at least, I should say, they don't learn about the capture of Ticonderoga until the 18th. It's still several more days before they find out that Arnold went up to Fort St. John, captured a British sloop as a prize, and came back. So Congress is at an impasse. They don't know what to do. Well, their first thought was, let's get rid of Fort Ticonderoga. We really don't need it. We'll strip it of everything that it has, and we will use it elsewhere. But then they come to learn how many troops are in Canada, and another visitor comes to the Second Continental Congress. We'll say he's an ambassador from Montreal. He's there to plead the case for the average French Canadian. Let us not forget that Canada was not always a British colony. So there's a lot of French Canadians that are living there that are almost indifferent to the British government. So this man comes wanting to plead the case that not all Canadians are siding with the British. It's mostly upper class. You see, Guy Carleton had befriended the Bishop of Canada, and the Bishop of Canada had turned around and issued a proclamation to the French Canadian, the Roman Catholic citizens of Canada, and told them that they should support the British government and not support an invasion of, quote-unquote, the Bostonians. So the upper class, the Roman Catholic Church, in a sense, are very much in favor of supporting the British government. What this ambassador wanted to do is to plead with the American colonies that they just are aware that the mostly middle and lower class citizens of Canada are indifferent to their British government and kind of either want to stay neutral or want to support the Americans. But it's not a clear definition of how much will and how much won't. We do know that the Canadians in the outlying areas, rural communities and such, were very much in favor of the Bostonian invasion, as it was quoted by the British government. So it stands to reason that Congress was at an impasse. So you, on one hand, have a lower middle class group that in the rural communities is going to support you, but in the cities, maybe not so much. They don't like the British government, but they may not side with you on an all-out attack of cities like Montreal and Quebec. You have a higher upper-class group that is very much in favor of the British government because, well, they're the ones paying all their bills. So Congress has a decision to make, and they issue simple orders. Until further notice, the soldiers at Ticonderoga are to remain at Ticonderoga until they organize a formal campaign. There will be no more movement up into Canada so as to not risk alienating the Canadian citizens that are in favor of an American invasion and removal of British government. Now, let's not forget about the intel that the Americans had captured when they were moving north to capture St. John and the British sloop. They had a detailed number of how many British regulars were in the area. Carleton, being the overall commander, had somewhere about 250 men in the city of Montreal. We know that he sent another 180 or so to St. John. There's 50 more men 12 miles north of St. John at Chambly, another fort on the Richelieu River. And then there's less than 100 men between Quebec's garrison and Chaudière border post in the upper areas of Canada. So Carleton's really stuck. He doesn't have many troops available to him, and he's going to have to shuffle them around as best he can. So the Americans are going to have to go into full-on planning mode to figure out what is to be done about Canada. And that's where we're going to leave it for this week. This week was just a sort of fill-in as everything's happening in and around Boston, what's going on with the men at Ticonderoga. Next week, I'm going to discuss one of the first major generals of the Northern Department, Philip Schuyler, a very well-known New Yorker and popular among Rangers such as myself that have worked in Saratoga. It's going to be another character study discussing Philip Schuyler, his early life, how he becomes such a prominent New Yorker. But it's also going to close the gap and kind of outline what Congress's decision is with moving north and why he's placed in command of the Northern Department. So this week's book recommendation is one that I'm going to rely on heavily for all the information for the next several episodes discussing the Battle for Quebec. And that's The Battle for the 14th Colony, America's War of Liberation in Canada from 1774 to 1776. So that's going to do it for this week. I hope everyone has a good week. And as always, remember to keep your powder dry.